Joining me in the Catalyst studio via phone is Nelima Bhatt. Welcome.
Nice to be here, Joe.
So you'll be in town in a few days, and you're working with Ingrid Harb at Women Ambassadors Forum. Can you give us a little preview of what you'll be speaking about?
I've written this book with my co-author, Raj Basodia, and he and I are involved with the Conscious Capitalism movement. One of the tenets of the movement is that we need conscious leaders to create the change that's needed in business. And this book, Shakti Leadership, that he and I have written together, is about a model for conscious leadership that works for both men and women. And it draws from wisdom of the East and the West, ancient and modern. It's really an attempt to create the most integrated approach to leadership and the most conscious approach to leadership that is needed to create the change needed in the world of business today. So that's what my book is about, and that is what I'll be sharing on when I'm in Tampa. It's a book that speaks to women. Of course, it speaks to men as well. It's for both. But there's been a lot of interest from women because most leadership models have been made by men for men. And this is a model where women feel equally included and inspired to model.
Can you juxtapose the traditional thinking around leadership to the ideas that you're putting forth?
So most leadership models are about the exercise of power to generate agenda outcomes that are of self-interest of the person or the organization or community he represents. And it has led to win-lose solutions. And these are very militaristic models, very hierarchical. And they served well at a time when that's the way the world was organized. But the world of business today is global. It needs collaboration rather than competition. It needs diversity and inclusion. And so the way Shakti Leadership is assembled is we're looking at leaders to first become more present and more mindful so that they're not being led by their ego. And from there, they have the ability not just to focus on desired outcomes that are good for all, but also a way to do it that takes everybody along. So there is caring and sharing and collaboration and compassion and kindness in the process. So it's a very different approach, saying no one has to lose in order for us to win. We can actually figure out solutions that are good for all. We have capacities if we know how to tune into them and access that range of creativity that's within all of us, that together we can actually find solutions that are good for all. No one needs to lose in order for us to win.
So the traditional sort of backbone of capitalism is self-interest. And it sounds like you're redefining what that self-interest is to be more inclusive so that it's not a singular self-interest, which then drives the power dynamic, but instead an inclusive self-interest, which is maybe ultimately true self-interest.
That's well put, Joe, because the realization comes as we mature psychologically that the only win is actually a win-win-win. That if you think if you win and the other person loses, eventually that part of the system that has lost, because we're all part of one system, we're all on the same boat eventually. You can't drill a hole in one side of the boat and think, you know, the other side is going to float. We're all going to sink. So the only win is a win-win. When everybody wins is when the individual also moves forward. That none of us are okay until all of us are okay. This is a deep realization when we look at capitalism today, which is broken, that self-interest is actually what's good for everybody.
And you went through a personal moment of existential insight, we'll call it, that led you to move away from your corporate career. Can you dig into what the first inklings of that were and how that kind of moved along?
Yeah, I think my generation, I'm 53 now, and I have this real sense of regret as I look back on the last 25, 30 years, which is I think my generation that entered the workforce, kind of the reason the planet is in this terrible place right now, and I take ownership of that. I think we were so busy coming out of the And I'm from India, and I know my parents came from very middle-class backgrounds, and all we wanted was to get into the corporate world and get these big fat paychecks and buy our nice homes and cars and have our nice holidays around the world and put our children through good schools. You know, we did all that, and yet we didn't really look at the impact of the organizations we were working in to get the lifestyle we were looking for ourselves. And I think at 32, it hit me when I was very successful. I was looking after corporate communications for Asia Pacific, for ESPN and Star Sports. And this is a Disney and News Corp joint venture. And it just felt like a lot of fun that, you know, I'm there to just earn my thing and do my piece. But at 32, I realized, what am I doing? You know, what am I a part of? And is that making a difference in a way that the world needs? And the answer was no. And this is not really calling out anything, you know, that's wrong with these amazing companies. But personally, for me, I realized I wasn't living a life aligned with a sense of higher purpose. And I realized I needed to live a life that had meaning and purpose. And just earning a good paycheck and buying my own home somehow wasn't enough. There was still a hole in the soul. And, you know, the search for meaning and purpose began that, who am I? Why am I here? If I put in a hard day's work, then surely it should amount for more than just my personal needs being met, because I wasn't fulfilled. I wasn't feeling like my life had meaning. So that's the background that made me then leave the corporate world in search of meaning and purpose. And what does it mean to live a life that makes a difference?
And so did you try to answer some of those questions or derive some meaning while staying within the framework first? You know, and assuming that didn't work out for you, do you think it's the framework itself that makes it really difficult to do that? Or was that more personal for you?
Great question, Joe. In my case, it was synchronicity that just as I was feeling completely underwhelmed with my corporate success, that I got moved to London with my family. My husband got posted to London. So very naturally, I had to leave the job I was in. And when I moved to London, I decided I'm not going to automatically go job hunting for the next big role, that I had the luxury to do some search within. And I took up the study of yoga and Vedanta and looking for existential answers. Who am I? Why am I here? And this is when my husband got diagnosed with colon cancer at the height of his corporate global career. And I think life took us over instead of us having to make difficult choices. You know, life made those difficult choices for us. And we were forced to then figure out what is a life of meaning, what is a life of health. As he said, I had to choose life over lifestyle. We had to give up our big fat paychecks and return to India and just make sure he recovered his health and survived, which he has, which is amazing. In the process, we had the time to discover new ways which are more holistic and more integrated to live and work. And that then went on to become these two books and these two bodies of work that I have brought into the world. The first is My Cancer Is Me, The Journey from Illness to Wholeness. And it's really a framework for well-being, which is your best prevention against disease. And the second book is Shakti Leadership, which is in a model for living consciously and leading consciously. So, you know, along the way, we started doing consulting for organizations on conscious leadership. And we discovered most organizations are not yet ready for these new ideas, because for them, the old strategies are still working. And until the old strategies become unsuccessful, they're not really going to look for new ways. We were fortunate that we found a movement like conscious capitalism with people like John Mackey and Raj Sisodia, and there's a whole bunch of us back in India. We found our tribe of people who were looking at a broken system and recognized that it's broken and were looking for new ways. Then when you share what you share, there is a ready soil for it. Today, I would say that more companies and more individuals are beginning to feel the brokenness of their existing system and therefore are looking for answers. But back when we started in 2001, we were a very small tribe.
It makes me think one barrier to this movement and one that, you know, for unfortunate reasons that you were able to avoid is, you know, high performing women often connect with high performing men, as is in the case in your relationship with your husband's cancer. You were sort of forced out of that together. You were forced out of that position to a new position together. But, you know, in a lot of relationships, one partner will be moving in this direction faster or more aggressively than another. So how do you coach and work with people to solve that problem in the family dynamic?
First of all, Joe, I'm just amazed at the level of your questions. I'm looking forward to actually meeting you, saying, where's all this coming from? You're someone who's obviously journeyed and you know why you're asking these questions. Not everyone gets to ask these questions. The answer would be the responsibility lies with the one more healed. So of course, when you're in partnership and you're growing together, you're working together as a husband and wife or as partners, you know, it's very, very rare that both partners would be developing, maturing at the same pace. And so if one of them suddenly matures and has a growth spurt psychologically and spiritually, emotionally, then it becomes their responsibility to not get frustrated and not break the relationship, but if possible, hold space compassionately without allowing themselves to get held back. Hold space for the other partner to come into their own path and their own growth journey in their own time. It's a very deep process. And I'm noticing, unfortunately, that most marriages are not surviving the awakened woman. And so I go around saying this and telling people, you know, don't leave the marriage, because really there is no better solution with someone else out there. You know, wherever you go, there you are. So stay in there, hang in there, and don't let yourself be held back if you're growing, but allow the other person to find their path and their pace.
I finished with one question, and it's, I guess, somewhat nuanced, but I'm really curious to hear your take on it. So you went down that initial road, kind of follow the trajectory of your upbringing into the well-trodden corporate path. And, you know, after 10 or 12 years, you got to a place where you saw it wasn't a fit and you went through this great transformation. And as people have these desires for, you know, existential exploration, a lot of times they'll utilize tools like yoga or meditation or religions. And, you know, there's a well-trodden path there too. What thinking do you put in place so that, you know, the sort of aspects of that don't repeat themselves, so that 10 or 12 years down the road, you end up down a path with some of the same, you know, well-troddenness of the corporate path that may or may not be a fit?
Well, first of all, I would say always have your discernment eye open whenever you enter into any deep paths of self-exploration and tools and frameworks, of which there are plenty out there. There are also plenty of teachers out there who are not necessarily enlightened as they teach these great traditions, whether it is Sufism or Buddhism or yoga, or there's just so many, you know, psycho-spiritual paths that are out there for us to try and experiment with and see whether they are the ones for us. In my case, I would say it's been a real deep love affair. I don't want to be released from it, because every time I check in, I've learned some lessons, of course. I have, you know, there'll always be the teacher who teaches you that you can't just give your power away to a teacher. And that too is a lesson to learn on the way. But you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't throw out the deep wisdom tradition that this teacher may have been teaching. And so in my case, coming to yoga, coming to integral yoga, and then gathering these incredible tools and practices from other traditions, and then putting together my own unique synthesis of how I want to live a life more consciously, how I want to lead my life more consciously, I would not give this up for anything. This is just a deep river I have found that I need to actually walk in, bathe in, swim in, more and more, actually, if I have to find solutions to problems I'm facing and problems that my community, my tribe, my country, my planet is facing. So I would actually say, do not move away from these wonderful traditions. They've been around for thousands of years to serve us at this time. But we, of course, have to exercise our own discretion and discernment in how we understand these teachings and practices and how we use them.
It's wonderful. It sounds like a wonderful place to be. And we are very appreciative that you're sharing that with us here in the area. And we'll look forward to your visit and your talk. And we'll make sure we link to your books in the article that will accompany this audio. And very much appreciate your time.
Thank you, Joe. I hope I get to see you when I come.